actually are based in Delft. It's a very, very, very big place. It's a small place, but it's got a lot of people. It's probably you have more people in that small area than you have in many of the areas around here put together. We probably have about 200,000 people in that area. There were 110,000 people in 2011. And if you think of the explosion that has happened between that time and now, it's been a lot of housing developments there, the N2 Gateway, that's where it is. So Delft is an exciting place. And I think at the moment, we're just on the surface, you know. We're not getting deep into it. It's a kind of community where it's just a combination of a lot of communities. You have a lot of people that are coming from different parts of the country, different parts of Africa, coming to make a living in Cape Town. So they work all over in the city ball, and there's a taxi to almost everywhere from Delft. All roads can get anywhere from Delft. Whether you want to go to Stellenbosch, whether you want to go to Strand, whether you want to go to Milnerton, Parkland side, whether you want to go to the city itself, you know, you get one straight taxi. It's cheaper sometimes. Feels like it's cheaper sometimes. It's cheaper to go to the city. No, not quite. To go to the city than to go to Belleville or something like that. It's a very dynamic place. We are still very much a small church. We've been there for about 5 years. We were there from the beginning. Around 2013, we were asked to be elders. My wife is over there. And I've got Rie as well. She's my friend's daughter. She's with us in Delft as well. She's a minister. And we started there. So we've been there around 5 years. And it's been quite a challenge to create that family, you know, with sort of a rainbow family, except that there is no white color there. There isn't much of that, but you know, it was still very diverse. But anyway, that is a challenge. So when we went to Convergence 2 weekends ago, the Sunday was quite a blessing for us because we had hired a combi. And in that combi, there were different people in there. You had colored people, Afrikaans speaking and English speaking, very lekker English. You had people from Zimbabwe, I think there may have been just two or so. You had people from the Eastern Cape, closer speaking people. You had, you know, it was quite a family. And to get those kind of groups to work together is not easy. This ni maklekni. Kunzima. But it was pleasing to see them, and when they go to Convergence, how they were talking to one another, and how they were conversing to one another, how you could relate to say this is a family member from Delft, and so on. So that for us is pleasing, and that's what we want to see more of in our community. So it's lovely, it's a challenge, but it's a privilege at the same time to be there. And for me, that is part of my story. I never really had a dream to be a pastor. It's something that I stumbled into. But I guess the Lord set me up for it, and I guess I fell for the bait, because I always, even though I was studying, took quite a keen interest in ministry, doing Bible school from my first year. I did that, and all the way to third year, I did that. And then when there were mission opportunities to go out and minister, I would take those opportunities. And my first year, I went on a Go South Africa tour. I know now there's Go South African charters that came from that Go South Africa tour that used to happen. I think it happened for about 7 years consecutively. So I was in, I think, the second or third run of that. I think the following year you went, but I pulled out in the last minute or something like that to do something else. So I've always, I took an interest, and I guess the Lord placed that in my heart. And through that, through those opportunities, volunteering and, you know, packing chairs and being part of a cell group and remaining committed to it and so on. I didn't know that I was actually being set up for leadership. But it was a good setup, I must say. And when I was in Stellenbosch for quite some time, I think I was there for about 6 years studying. I was studying actuarial science, and then towards the end of that, there was about 2 years I lived with Duval in Sutevede 20. That's when his wife sort of came on the scene and so on. We were there watching and praying. Because before then, he just had a bulldog. TJ or PJ?
TJ.
Oh, that dog, he would take that dog for a run. And that dog would be wasted when they come back. And to carry it back in it. Those were lovely times as students and, you know, as we were getting into adulthood, you know, making decisions. He was making a decision, you know, to marry at that time. We were aware of his stories. We are glad the way it worked out. I was still, you know, working out my own story as well. You know, and so around 2000, we did marriage counseling together. My wife came around 2007. We did marriage counseling together in William Corizon's place in Durbanville. Yeah, we caught up well. I caught up very quickly, I think, just in the following year. That was part of our story. It's a story of serving together, serving God together, discovering God together. What I used to do, and the reason why I decided to go and stay and live at the house, it was that house was owned by the church. It's because I was always fascinated to watch the people that were very involved in the church and how their lives were sort of shaping up. And I actually wanted to be close by. You know, see the action, like, you know, close by. And I've, the observation I made during that time is that the people that seem to grow in the faith are people that serve. It's not people that try to do all sorts of spiritual gymnastics. It's people that serve. Simplicity of serving. And it may start with just serving coffee. It may start with just standing at the door and welcoming people. But what I observed in that time is the power of serving, that there's no replacement for it. No matter how spiritually gifted you may be, how graced you are, and you can speak in tongues till kingdom come, you could do all sorts of things. You can prophesy, you can do that. But if there isn't a spirit to serve, that hampers your growth, or it sets you up for big time failure. That is the story. That is what I observe. And for me, it was clear that however my career may work out, I must continue to serve. Because that is how I will grow spiritually as well. Because you never stop growing spiritually. You know, some of us want to arrive spiritually. It doesn't happen. That happens in heaven one day. Then you have arrived. You know, when you are using Google Maps and so say, you have arrived. Only the angels will say that to you in heaven, you have arrived. While you're here on earth, you're never really going to arrive. You will be keeping on going. You'll be on this journey. I remember speaking to somebody that I used to work with in ministry, and she was saying that, wow, she has grown so much, she doesn't know what's next. And I said to her, well, you need to take someone on that journey. That's what's next. And that process of going to a certain level and then taking someone from the beginning to another level, that keeps you young in the faith. It keeps your spirit still hungry. You never want to be an old man spiritually and want to retire. So I see a lot of young people in the church here at the back. All the young people, yeah, amen, amen. See a young man over there. See some young people here. It's fantastic. You don't. There is no gray hair in the spirit. And so, I mean, if you, one of the people that is very, very influential to all of us is Pastor C.S. in Stellenbosch. And Pastor C.S. looks younger every year. And other people are getting gray and everything. But when you meet him, he looks younger and younger. He dresses even more like cool and so on. Because at some point, he decided he's going to be part of a cell group at a high school. He's going to lead a cell group at a high school. You know, I just pick up these things because me now I'm observant. I listen and I observe. So don't say too much around me because I'll make connections, put the dots together. And because he was leading the young people, he had to sort of not be too overwhelming for them. And that helps to keep him young. That's a part of the story. It's a story that we are part of. I'm part of the shofar story. And I'm very glad to be. And every family has challenges. Every family must have challenges. If your family doesn't have challenges, you must begin to wonder what's happening. Every family does, and we go through them. And I know that sitting here tonight, everyone has a story. From where you come from, we can see, I wish I could, when I look at your face and see where you come from, where you've been, what you've gone through, and what it has taken for you to be where you are. And that story needs to be told, needs to be known. Because sometimes if you the person sitting next to you, if you don't know their story, you don't know them. And there isn't just one story that matters. All the stories matter. They are part of the picture that God is painting. And I want to talk about a story. And in this story, the main thing is that while we're going through this story, you can begin to reflect about your story, your journey, your path. And that path is got all sorts of things, and it's your story, it's your journey. And there's no story that is better than another story. A story is a story. Wouldn't the world be boring if all the novels were the same? If all the autobiographies were the same? Imagine that. Imagine if everyone in the room was like you. Exactly my point. Let's go to the book of Genesis 37 so that I don't just tell you stories the whole night. So the word of God says that Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. The story of Joseph, the book of Genesis has got a lot of stories, some of them very interesting. So this Joseph had a dream. Now, I was telling people that I live with it, I don't dream much. My dreams, I'm like, after I wake up, I was like, that was nonsense. But some people seem to dream quite meaningful dreams. So Joseph had a dream. And most things start with a dream. A dream is like a seed. It starts somewhere in the mind. You can't touch it. It's there. It's a picture. Most things start with that. This church started off with a dream. Somebody, I don't know who, one day, so let's go to that Platteland town there and do the work of the Lord. Or somebody had an inspiration, or somebody had a dream at night. I'm not too familiar with the origins of this church, but the fact that it existed in somebody's heart, somebody's mind, before it existed, before you existed, yeah, as a family. And it has taken many years to be where it is today, about 11 years or so, about 8 years of toiling and praying. And this is where it is, and it could go even further. It will go even further than this. But the fact is, it started with a dream. What is your dream? What has God put in your spirit? You know, when I had to choose a university, I said, I want to go. We had a discussion with my parents. We must go to a university that has a 0% chance of striking. So that we can study with no disturbance. I think in my time, I never missed a day. There was never a day that was lost due to a strike. Okay, things have changed somewhat in the last while. But I had this desire to develop the gifts that I knew that I had at that time. I was mostly influenced by Miles Monroe growing up, because his story touched me. Because his story was about being told that he looked like a chimpanzee and he was going to amount to nothing. Do you know Miles Monroe? Go and read up on him. He passed away around 2014 in a tragic plane accident. And he tells a story and it was a teacher that told him, teacher from England, told him, you are just, he went home and he was like, but God, why did you make me like this? Why am I like this? But then he began to search the scriptures, began to read stories like this one. And he changed his view of himself because he realized, no, God did not make a chimpanzee in a human being. And he started to grow and he developed a very powerful ministry, writing books. One day he was in England after a session, a conference. He was signing his books and then an old man came to his table to get a signature. So, and he did that. The old man didn't move away. He looked at him and said, do you recognize me? Then he looked up and it was the teacher. And the teacher said to him, I didn't know you when I said those things. I didn't know what was inside of you. I didn't know. We don't know what is inside of you. But I want you to get in touch with what God has put inside of you. I had to do that. Get in touch with what's inside. What is that seed that God has planted inside of you? Get in touch with it. Know what it is. Because it will help you to say no to something and to say yes to other things. Otherwise, you sort of, the wind blows, you go. They say only dead fish go with the flow. Let's look at the second part of the story. His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So when he had that dream, he shared it. I think it was too much for his brothers. And therefore, your dream should not be shared with everybody because it will be too much for other people. You tell other people, I'm going to be a rich businessman one day, they go and witchcraft you because they feel they can never beat that. So it's not safe to share your dream with everybody, but it's good to share your dream. Because it says here, but his father kept the matter in mind. So the father listened and he put it in mind. I know the same was said about Mary when Jesus said what he did, when he said a few things when he was young. It says that she kept it in mind. She kept it. Like, wow. I'll pray about this. It is important to tell your dream, but it's important to be selective who you tell. You are shaping your story here. You have a dream and you're confessing it. Because if you don't confess it, you'll never be too sure about it. You need to begin to say it. And one of the first people you can tell is your journal, your diary. Tell your diary what your dream is. Because you need to hold yourself accountable. Like, if you have this dream, next day is another one, next day is another one, next day. Which dream do you really have if it changes every second? No, you're very gifted. No, you're very, very, very gifted. But there must be one that is more important, more overarching or something like that than others. Otherwise, you'll be confused. So a dream helps you to be focused in terms of where you're going. Let's look at the next part. 37:27 says, come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh and blood. So the brothers were so jealous, they decided we're going to have to get rid of this dreamer. I don't know about you. I don't know where you come from. I don't know you whether you've had that experience where people hated you for just being you. That says something. It means they're intimidated by the seed that is inside of you. It intimidates them. That is a clue, actually. It means they feel like there's dynamite inside of you. There's a sort of nuclear weapon. And they must now react to it even before it's actually ready to be deadly. Because it's powerful. You know, we see that example of Herod in the New Testament. After learning that a king has been born, he decides we must get rid of this king now while he's a baby. That means that he was intimidated by the potential that was in that baby. He couldn't wait 30 years and risk it. Gotta get rid of it now. That's the power of a seed. It intimidates the enemy. So that's what they did. But God was in control. Hallelujah. God was in control. God knew that, you know, this is part of my plan. We knew that as soon as this young man tells his dream, there are people who are going to help me to fulfill my purpose anyway. They're going to sell him to the Ishmaelites. And they were thinking of killing him first. But one of the brothers suggested, let's rather benefit from this transaction. Let's just sell him. They sold him. So not everything bad that happens in your life is bad. Some of the things that happen are there for a reason. That is the beauty of the gospel. Every situation can actually be redeemed. That's why we're not just in a religious setup. We're in a grace relationship that takes situations and things and shapes them, because God is working on a story. There's a bigger story. There's a master story here of which we are a part. And that story does not only involve perfect and things. That story involves your mistakes and many other things that are taken and used to shape that story. So don't condemn yourself because you did bad things. Don't condemn yourself because you don't have one or two things that you wish you had. That may just be part of the story. How can we talk about a person that rose from the villages if you never lived in villages? Can anything good come out of, is it Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? I mean, somebody had to be born in Nazareth and be in Nazareth so that that statement could be made. Can anything good come out of Malmesbury? So the books will be written about a good story that came out of Malmesbury. Hallelujah. Not every bad thing that happens is bad. Some of the things that happen are taking us to our destination. Joseph being sold to the Ishmaelites was a way for him to go to Egypt. It was free transport. Although he had to walk most of that distance, I think. No visa fees, nothing. The Ishmaelites probably paid bribes at the custom gates or whatever to get in, because they were bringing in goods, slaves. So some of the misfortunes you go through are the vehicles that you need to your destination. They are not bad. They feel bad now when you're going through them. But when you look back, you'll say, I'm glad that happened. Because otherwise, I would have been a spoiled brat. I wouldn't be where I am. I've got a cousin of mine. He always says, look, had I succeeded in my studies, I probably would be dead by now, given the kind of mentality I had. So I thank God I didn't succeed in my studies, because now I've found God. And I can build with understanding. Let's continue this story. Now he's sold. Now he's in Egypt. Now that seed is beginning to show its potential. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Now remember, this is a slave. He's not a free man. And you can ask yourself, the Lord is with him, yet he's a slave. That doesn't make sense. So can you see that God can work with situations? He can work with you in your bondage. And not saying that you will be in that bondage forever. But he's working with you because he's building something more powerful in that time. So God gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Has anybody ever entrusted to you everything they owned? It means you are still limited. There's a limitation on your seed because you can't be trusted. Because remember, good success is when God entrusts things to you. So if you can't be trusted, you can't have the kind of success that comes from God. Otherwise, you can go and make your own success where you steal from people or rob people or do all sorts of things. But the kind that comes from God requires that you be faithful in managing what is not your own. That is the skill that Joseph mastered in slavery. The company that you work for, can you be trusted with the keys to the safe? If you can't, then you know where you are. You are limiting your potential. You can't be trusted. So blessings cannot be released upon you because you cannot be trusted. You can blame and say, it's because I'm black. No, it's because you can't be trusted. Black or white. Sometimes politics gets us a bit messed up. Where we don't take responsibility for our actions. So when I was in Stellenbosch University, people would say, "Hey, but you know this university and this." I said, "Hey, Mina, I came here to study, but came here to study." So Mina, when I went to class, I was prepared. Whether it's in Afrikaans or what, I don't care. And the lecturer will come. I remember the one lecturer he came and then he was talking, reading the notes. I say, "You can't come to class unprepared." Because I prepare when I come to class. I expect you to prepare when you come to class. You can't come here. And this was a very revered professor. I said, "So, no. We are paying school fees. You can't give me substandard education like this. Bantu education has added it. I want education here." That man, I thought he was going to give it to me. I thought that farmer, he was going to give it to me. But I was ready, sitting in front there. And my class was, and my lecturer said to me, "Okay, tomorrow you are coming. You're coming to lecture the other guys." I said, "Fine, I'll do it." And man, I did not understand that material at the time. But I went and I read and I this and that. And then we came the next day. He says, "Okay, Mulauti, come, lecture." I started trying and I was not so good at it. And then he started helping out and so on. And it turned out into a very good thing. Because when he looked at it, he saw that this one is not here to Zavalaza. This one wants to get education. I could see them starting to have favor upon me, my lecturers. White as they are, Afrikaner as they are, and black as I am. And I'm very black. You are lucky if you can see my teeth here. But being black is okay. It's fine. Thank you. It's good. Because imagine if everyone was white. Come on. No flavor. Hi. Must have some color. Huh? Come on. You go to the parking lot, you only see white cars. Then you know you're in a rental agency. Or government cars. The Lord was with him. And that's what matters. You need the Lord to be with you, whether you're black or white. You just need the Lord to be with you. Let's listen to more of this story. Now, Joseph was a good-looking fella. Yeah. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome, ladies. And after a while, his master's wife, took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. We are all grown-ups in this house. So, you know, not everything that gives you a good comment, you should act upon. We call that temptation. So you don't have to submit to it. So here, this was a temptation. And temptation is guaranteed. It's going to be part of your gene. So not every job that is offered to you, do you have to take it. Not every sort of sum of money that is offered to you, do you have to take it. You don't have to take it. If it's not going to help you to fulfill the potential that is inside of you, say no to it. Because it won't help you. It won't get you to your destiny. It will get you to another destiny that you don't want to go to. And Joseph knew that. And that must be a part of our story. When have you said no to something? If you are the kind of person that keeps on saying yes to everything, you don't know where you're going. You don't value the seed that is inside of you. Because that seed that is inside of you, not everything is going to be good for it. That seed needs to be looked after. And that cannot be done if we're just saying yes to everything. If you are pregnant, you'll say no to alcohol. You'll say no to smoke. Or you would even say no to Coca-Cola. Or other things that will not be good for the seed. You'll make sacrifices so that you keep the seed healthy. But if you don't even know you've got a seed, you'll just not alles op yet. Just eat everything because, you know, there's nothing much to it. Let's look at the next one. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Now, this man, he's done well. He's doing well. Everything, he's in charge of everything. But because he had to resist the temptation, he ended up in prison because somebody lied. And he spent many years in that prison. So, sometimes you'll go through difficult things, not because you did anything bad, but just because you are resisting temptation. You are refusing to participate in certain things. And you are being cast out. They tell you, this one, he's a coconut. This one, he goes to that church there with white people. Who does he think he is? This one is always studying, man. He's a bookworm. No, people, the world has names to shame you for being serious with your calling. And if you're not going to stand, you will not realize your potential. I had to stand. People call me all sorts of names. I would say, it's fine. I came prepared for this. Actually, if it's not happening, I know something is wrong. When I was in Hayesville, I would stand up to the guys and say, no, these posters that you have in the passages, naked women, remove them. I was a first year or second year student. Yeah, they were angry. Who does he think he is? And so I said, remove them. They removed them. And they will call you all sorts of names. They start by shaming you and calling you all sorts of names. Afterwards, they start coming to your room for advice. Some of them got saved in the process. Stand up for something. Don't have to fall for everything. So this man went to jail for standing up. But going to jail was another way for him to be elevated. It just took long. I see this like, You could climb stairs. Maybe there's a million stairs you have to climb. So you start climbing, And at some point, you fall. And you go down. And then it takes 2 years for the lift to come. But once the lift comes, you're at the top immediately. That's like what happened here. It looks like a delay. But when the promotion comes, it's almost immediate. You skip all the steps. You get all the way to the top immediately. You cannot imprison a blessed man or woman. You can't. You can just delay. But the more you delay it, the more you're going to accelerate the promotion. And let's look at that promotion. Let's look at the next one. Yeah, that's it. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and as wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace. Come on. From a prisoner to be in charge of the palace. The whole kingdom. And that was the biggest at that time. The only one that had food at that time. The others were starving. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. This is a foreigner who's being placed in charge of a different nation. What trust was being bestowed upon this man because of his faithfulness and because of his submitting to God through very difficult times? Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Be ready for your moment. If your moment comes today, are you going to be ready? Can you be trusted? We give you R1 billion today. Can we trust you, or are you going to be buying Brazilian hair? Or yacht? You're going to be bringing a yacht and you don't come to Sunday services anymore. You're out there in the ocean. You'll be watching what telecast, whatever, on when you're out there. Are you going to be ready when your moment comes today? Do you have that moral and spiritual fortitude inside of you to make it, to grasp, to grab your moment? If Pastor Devalier all of a sudden, this place is big and all the millionaires, farmers are here and so on, and all of a sudden he's on TV and so on, is he going to be the same Deval that we know? Be careful what you wish for. Are you ready for it? One thing I like about preaching is that I get to preach to myself as well. And many of the messages that God inspires me with are messages that are very relevant to me. Are you ready for your moment? Are you and I ready for our moment? Let's look at the last one. Now Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Yeah, like a cherry on top there. I mean, the man was in jail for a long time. The man refused to fall into temptation there in that house. And here he's being rewarded. I think, you know, I asked myself, this Pharaoh, did he have this lady reserved to honor someone? Was she maybe the Miss Egypt? At that time, like, you know, David also, you know, he was given a trophy as well when he defeated Goliath. So things used to work like that back then. And he was rewarded. But I'm pointing this out because one of the areas in which, especially young people, we fall is in this area of marriage and so on. Getting into things before time. And that can destroy our destinies. There are certain things that one needs to wait for. Because they are an instrumental part of our destiny. Let us stand. I hope that the only thing you will I hope that the only thing you will remember will not be the cherry on top. You have your story. You have a path. And I want you to encourage you when you get home, when you have time during the week, write your story. Write your story. The good and the bad parts. Write it. Be accountable to yourself. Write your story. And the fact that you are here today says to me that you want to be part of a bigger story. You want to be part of the God story. And at times when we come to church, we want God to be part of our story. Which is a good start, but the ultimate is to be part of God's story, because He's writing that story. In reality, every story becomes God's story. But on that, we have a role to play. Decisions that we make. The decisions that we make. The decisions that we make. The decisions that we make. Your story is a sum total of your decisions. Things will happen to you that are not your decision, but how you react to those things is your decision. You are not in control of life. None of us are. We could have a gunman walk in here and shoot some of us. But how we react to that will be our story. And as a person, you must take responsibility for your story, your reaction, how you deal with challenges, how you deal with things that happen. That's your story. You take responsibility for that. Let us close our eyes. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are writing the story. You are the master story maker. You've been doing that for eons, for ages. From the beginning, you've been making the story. We are ever so grateful that part of your story is documented. We can go and reflect on it and read the conquests. And Lord, our story as individuals is unfolding every day. There are decisions for us to make. We can choose to be better, or we can choose to be at peace. And I know in this hall today, there are people that are in the valley of decision making. They have to decide whether they're going to forgive someone. They have to decide whether they're going to give their lives to you and allow you to write their story and allow themselves to be part of your story.